Welcome back in. Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have Predators assistant coach Dan Hinote coming up at 7:30, looking ahead to the game tonight as the Predators host the Boston Bruins. And next hour from 8 to 8:30, we'll be joined by Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports for his weekly visit as well. So looking forward to all that. Speaking of the Predators, Joe, David Poile's appearance on our show a couple of days ago has made the rounds, especially in hockey circles, and a lot of people reacting to his comments from the question that you asked him about what it would take for the Predators to be a seller and what that could look like for the Predators as they move forward here. And Jeff Merrick, who, of course, is friend of the show, does the 32 Thoughts podcast with Elliot Friedman. He had Elliot Friedman on his podcast, the Jeff Merrick podcast, and they were talking about what Poile said on our show, and we're talking about just what that path could look like for the Nashville Predators. And a Nashville Predators defenseman who has been at the subject of these rumors before, Mattias Ekholm, was brought up by Elliot Friedman, and he had some interesting comments on Ekholm and some things that he's heard regarding a trade for Ekholm. Here's what Elliot Friedman had to say on the Jeff Merrick podcast.
I have to say this. I've had some people who really pushed back on the idea of Ekholm being available, and I think we'll get some clarity on that over the next little bit.
So that was Elliot Friedman on with Jeff Merrick on the podcast there. Says he's gotten some pushback on the idea of Mattias Ekholm being available. We've talked about if the Predators are going to sell, who could it be? He talked about Ekholm. That's kind of the name that's being thrown around from a national perspective of like, I've already seen Oilers fans in my mentions of like, man, could the Oilers go try to get Ekholm, because that could be the kind of the perfect guy that they need on the back end there. Friedman seemed to have some hesitation on the Ekholm front, but he did kind of present some counters to what he think the Predators might do with one of their defensemen. Here's what Friedman had to say about Dante Fabro.
The team last year, even though they got wiped out in the first round of the playoffs without Saros, they gave Poile reason to pause. And now I think the question is going to be, he's not, look, he basically said it, they're not a buyer, and now we're going to see what they're going to do. And I think he's going to try to move a defenseman. I'm not convinced it's Ekholm. I don't think it's going to be Carrier. I think it's like a Fabro or something else there, and we'll see what he does up front. But I agree with you. I don't think they're buyers.
So Friedman going with the doesn't think it's going to be Ekholm. They did talk about Ryan McDonagh and maybe what that could look like in terms of that's a big cap hit to be moving. What do you make of, first off, Friedman's pushback on Ekholm, how he doesn't – he made it sound like he doesn't think that Ekholm's going to be available. And number two – he also said he expects them to do something on defense, just doesn't really expect it to be Ekholm.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, including poor Alex Carrier, man. You know, Poile calls him Carrier, and now Friedman calls him – what do you call him? Carrier?
Carrier? Yeah.
Like, it's like Kyrie Legend. It's like a Mr. song from the 80s. God, poor guy. It's not that hard of a name. Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like – That sounds like Elliot got, you know, when he says pushback, I mean, to me, I don't think you're mentioning pushback on that if it's not pushback from Nashville, right?
Correct.
I mean, that's just how I read it. So it's interesting. I mean, if there's no way, and I know that they just signed him, but if there's no way that he's available, then it sounds like the only kind of selling they're really considering, and again, not that this couldn't change, but it sounds like what you would call soft selling, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, Fabro certainly would, I think, would make sense. You've broken it down many times on this show, the situation with, you know, with Fabro and Carrier, poor guy, you know, in terms of they're both RFAs after this year, and you know, Fabro making 2.4 this year for his role on this team. That's rich, you know, given the cap and where you are. Like, I mean, to me, that's kind of an obvious one. but it's also not something that brings much of a return. What would Ekholm, if you were willing to trade Ekholm, what would the return be on Matthias Ekholm? And you're talking about a, you know, good player who is at 6.25 AAV through the 25-26 season.
Yeah, it's a great question, because I think if you did it a couple years ago, Joe, you're probably getting a first round pick and a prospect back. Like, you're probably getting that back for Matthias Ekholm a couple of years ago. Now he's 32 and he is locked in long term. Now, some people would say, okay, well, having him locked in long term helps because you have term with the contract.
If it can work out for you. Yeah.
I think that really comes down to the eye of the beholder, right? Like, who values the long term contract and who views it as a, all right, well, do I really want Matthias Ekholm in his mid to late 30s when maybe he's not quite the same player? I think that it really kind of depends on the eye of the beholder there. Could you get a first round pick for him? I think maybe. I mean, look, that's the thing about trying to determine prices at the trade deadline. It's different every year, right? I mean, look, Jeremy Lozon cost a second round pick last year. So conventional wisdom would tell you, like, if Jeremy Lozon cost a second round pick, my God, what could Matthias Ekholm fetch you? But it's not the same every year, and the contract is a part of it. Like, when somebody's making the commitment to take that type of money off your hands, sometimes the return isn't quite as much. So I think they could probably get a first round pick for him. Could they still get a first round pick and a high level prospect? I have my doubts about that. I mean, the fact is, he's 32. He'll be 33 in May, and that's a heck of a cap hit that comes with it. And look, I still think Matthias Ekholm is really good. I think he's a really good shutdown type of defenseman. I don't know that he's quite the same player that he was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I would, to me, if you could get a first round, like, that's the thing. Whenever you put it in Lausanne context, it's like, oh my God. So he's, what do you get, three first rounders for Matthias?
Right. But, like the Predators, they went and got Paul Gostad one time and it cost him a first round pick. So that's the thing about the deadline, is you have no idea what the prices are going to look like.
Yeah. I mean, to me, if you could get a first round pick, which I think you should, I think you'd have to consider it again. If you're resolved and you're kind of looking at things and like, okay, this just has to be, it has to go this way. Whatever level of rebuild we're talking about, it has to go that way. I think if you can get a first round pick and dump, you know, and open up $6.25 million over the next few years, I think you'd have to really strongly consider it. Now, you know, if that were the case also, that could change how you look at the Fabro-Carrier thing.
Yeah.
Right. In terms of long term, but yeah, I don't know there, but there's one, you know, there's one huge move that we've talked about some, but to me, like, that has to at least be discussed, like the move that has to be discussed that I think could, you know, may have to actually start to be discussed seriously inside that building, which maybe we should do after the break. That was a terrible tease by me.
Well, you nailed it. We'll get into that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Got more of your thoughts to get to on the Predators as well. We'll do all of that coming up next. Moving is no fun and can be expensive. You can save on your next move with our Nashville's Best Deal of the Week from Black Tie Moving. Get $200 off a half-day move for just $75, or $400 off a full-day move for $150 at thegamenashville.com/deals. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Speaking of that, I've got some tickets to give away to see the Dave Matthews Band at Bridgestone Arena on May 26th. Be caller number 5-615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of tickets to see Dave Matthews Band coming up at Bridgestone Arena on May 26th. 615-737-1025. Let's go to our 1025 The Game phone line and welcome in Adam from Portland. Adam, good morning. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Hey, buddy. Hey, I'm looking at it. So you guys are bring up some good points about, I guess, the status quo, man. Everything's changing for the Preds. It's not the same. So you got to shift. What about getting our short goalie out of there, man? Like, that's the one that I've been thinking about for years. And it's hard to say that because he wins and he had the 95 saves or whatever he had that one game. And you're like, well, he's pretty good. But he's also short. Like, and I know that's a thing. Like, fight me on it, I guess. But they'll say in the broadcast, he's so shifty that he makes up for being short. Well, he also gets beat high a lot because he's short. So I like Soros. I think he's awesome. I think if we're going to rebuild, why not let the Russian kid get in there and get some reps and get some – because you can get value for him, right? I mean, maybe not as much as somebody like Ekholm, but you could probably get some value for him. So I would say Soros would be our big one.
Well, thanks for the call. Well, Joe, to that point, I mean, you could get – I think you could get a ton for Soros,
oh,
right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you could get much more for Soros.
Yeah, you could get a ton for Soros. I mean, you're talking about one of the elite goaltenders in the league. Like the conversation around his lack of size is not a new one, but it's – I understand it. I really do. But, like, also – don't the numbers for him just kind of speak for themselves? Like, he does get beat high on occasion. Now, he doesn't get beat high that much because the numbers would tell you he doesn't get beat in general that much. So, I mean, like, UC Soros is 100% good enough to win a Stanley Cup with. Now, it takes more than the goaltender, as we've discovered. I mean, who do you think is a better goalie, UC Soros or Darcy Kuemper? I think we know the answer to that question. And he won a Stanley Cup last year because of the team he had around him. UC Soros is a guy that at some point, whether it's now or whether it's in the summer or whether it's a year or two down the road, they're going to be faced with a decision at goalie. And they're going to have to, in my opinion, trade one of them.
Absolutely. And it may be sooner than later. And thank you, Adam. Adam, perfectly, that was what I was teasing, was the Soros discussion. And the question I have is, Is there a particular team out there right now that would be able to and would look at itself as like, we are now, you know, in strong position to win the cup because we just acquired UC Soros? By the way, this gives me, before you answer that, you know, I'm having PTSD from the spring of 1994 when my beloved Red Wings traded Tim Chevalier for Bob Essenza.
Yes.
And they thought, and as it turns out, he got replaced by a rookie named Chris Osgood in the first round loss to the Sharks, which is one of the all-time shockers in NHL playoff history. The Red Wings that year were, they won the President's Trophy. They were absurd, but they had, like, their goaltending was like, you know, it was throw in somebody and see what we can do. But anyway, I thought of that. Like, right. That was their big move. And is there a team right now that Soros, that they could make it work, that the Preds could get a huge haul back from? That's another thing. And then that team all of a sudden is like, uh-oh, they might just win the thing.
Well, look, I'll be totally honest. Like, I don't know every team's cap situation.
Right.
I can tell you, I mean, just think about teams that need a goalie, right? Like, Edmonton needs a goalie. Now, they just signed Jack Campbell to an absurd contract that I think they already regret and will continue to regret as they move forward here. But, I mean, Edmonton needs a goalie. You start to look over in the East, like, you know, Toronto is good. How much better could they be with UC Soros? I mean, look, if UC Soros were available, you would have a lot of teams making a phone call. I'll put it that way. You'll have a lot of teams making a phone call to inquire about his services. Number one, I don't think the Predators are going to entertain doing that right now. I'm not saying that it's not that they shouldn't. I'm just saying I don't think they're going to entertain doing that right now. But that decision has to come at some point. And I do think when you look at his contract right now, he's one of the best bangs for the buck in the league in terms of
no doubt
the money and the value that he brings at the goaltending position. And you could wait another year or two to do it if you wanted to, but you don't want to wait too long where his contract is expiring and he's going to be a UFA after that, and that brings down the value of UC Soros. It's like he's one of those ones where somebody like the term on the contract would be, I think, highly appealing to everybody acquiring UC Soros.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's perfect right now. You can get him and you have him, you know, you have him locked up the next two seasons. One, you could go right into a run and he could, you know, be a big part of a run, and you could, and then, you know, you have him locked up for the next two seasons at $5 million. I mean, seriously, how many bargains are better than UC Soros? He's the reason that we're even talking about the playoffs, that we're not certain they're selling, you know,
right.
That we're not certain that it's a complete fire sale is because of him. He's making $5 million. I mean, it's actually, you know, he's too nice a guy, but I do wonder every once in a while if he looks at the Preds contract table and just shakes his head, you know, as his pay compared to some of his teammates and what they're doing. But, man, I'm with you. To me, it's like, you know, like the timing and the market you could create here in a couple weeks could be pretty remarkable. Because Toronto is definitely a team I thought of, and they probably have to send back one of their big guns, right? That's the only thing. It's like, then what are they doing to themselves? But in terms of salary, right? I would think. I just assume everybody's at least pretty darn close who's good to the cap because of the way the cap situation has gone in the NHL since the pandemic. But we talked to David Poy yesterday or 2 days ago, and he made it clear, not buying, you know, and he also, you know, it doesn't sound like someone who's ready to have that fire sale, but if the team goes in one direction here in the next couple of weeks, I think you got to start thinking about this.
I think you got to start thinking about it. And let's say let's even go with they take the soft sell approach, right? And that's Fabro or whoever, that they go with the soft sell. Like, don't you, this offseason, you have to be thinking about, if you're Poyle or, you know, people making decisions, all right, how do we create a little bit of flexibility here, right? You know, the cap is what it is. We know we're not getting rid of those Johansson and Duchesne contracts. I think you're going to have a tough time getting rid of the Granlund contract. You know, just based on the cap, you might have a tough time getting rid of McDonough's contract. I would explore that at this deadline for sure, if that's the way you go about selling. But like this summer, do you feel like you can make some moves that give you a little bit of flexibility, and is Soros a part of that? Like right now, if they made the Soros move, I don't think they have any interest in bringing up Askarov and letting him play here. Like I think they want him to play in Milwaukee. They want him to play a lot. They want him to develop. And I think that's the right path for them to take. So, like, is Kevin Lankinen in your starting goaltender? I mean, it doesn't really matter. If you're trading UC Soros, the season's done at that point anyway. So,
right,
doesn't really matter who your starting goaltender is. I'm curious for – it all goes back to this. They got to find a way to get a little flexibility to them. They got to find a way to open up some cap room. If selling is the route they go – we've talked about it. Some of the contracts you'd most like to get rid of are the ones that are going to be impossible to sell. So how do you create flexibility if you can't get rid of some of those contracts? That's what David Poyle and the Predators have to figure out.
Yeah. Although Nathan from Lawrenceburg says, what about a head coaching change instead of trading Soros? Yes, I'm sure they'll be cup bound if you make a head coaching change. And I don't know if you're trolling us or not, Nathan.
Yeah. Well, look, that very well could happen. I'm not saying that can't happen, but they've got problems, whether you want to believe it or not, they got problems that are rooted much deeper than the head coach right now. That's where they are. And in the meantime, they got a game tonight as they take on the Boston Bruins. You're coming off a bad loss to Arizona on Monday, and now you got the best team in the league coming up tonight at Bridgestone Arena. Coming up next, we'll get into that. We'll be joined by Predators assistant coach Dan Hynote. We'll get his thoughts on the team, get his thoughts on the game tonight against Boston. All of that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning. Preds taking on the Boston Bruins tonight. We'll be joined by Predators assistant coach Dan Hynote coming up here in just a few minutes. Preds fans, hang out tonight before the Preds game at the Superbook Lounge in Landshark Bar and Grill, Margaritaville on Broadway. With 102.5, 106.3, the game, you can place your bets with Superbook and enjoy great food and drink specials. Plus, enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Make sure you check that out tonight as the Predators take on the Boston Bruins at Bridgestone Arena tonight. So you have the loss against Arizona on Monday and Boston coming in tonight. And, Joe, I saw a little bit of the Boston-Dallas game the other night. And Boston gets it done in overtime on the road at Dallas. That team is really good. I mean, it's kind of absurd. And they've slowed down a little bit recently, but it's kind of absurd what they've done. They're 48-5 so far this season, and they are running away with things in the Eastern Conference. So a big challenge tonight for the Nashville Predators. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Predators assistant coach Dan Hynote. Dan, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're awesome. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Dan, let's just start there. You got a Boston team coming in tonight that has been unbelievable so far this year, 48-5 on the season. What do you make of the challenge tonight? What stands out to you when you watch tape of what Boston's done so far this year?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm sitting here watching their power play. And it's kind of the stuff of nightmares if you're trying to kill it. But they're, you know what makes them special? I mean, I'm sure it gets overdone in the media, and I don't read a ton about it. But their discipline and leadership and just watching their best players control the game in a night, in and out every night is impressive. Because they do it so consistently. I really loved – I got – the pleasure to, of coaching Foligno in Columbus and kind of watching him grow as a leader. And then that little video clip of him in the outdoor game, kind of rallying the troops, telling the coaches, hey, you guys stay out. We're going to take the locker room. And then, you know, he gave that speech and then, you know, they came out and played their style. And, you know, I just, from a coaching perspective, you wish every single locker room looked like that. That's the blueprint of leadership. So for me, that's what's really impressive about Boston after all these years is year in and year out, their leadership has a large part of their success and has done so for many years. So that, you know, when you're watching it, you just, you know, you can watch the penalty kill, you can watch the power play, you watch their 5-on-5 game. It's all riddled with their leaders, you know, leading the way. And so it's really impressive.
But Dan, taking it to your own locker room, of course, you know, we all talked about, wrote about, asked about, you know, a few weeks ago, the meeting with, you know, some obviously some very honest conversation among players. And there was a good burst of really good hockey after that. Then you guys have the break and it hasn't gone as well since then. Where do you feel like this locker room is in terms of confidence, but also just, you know, that accountability and that the feeling that you guys can make a push here?
I think our confidence level is really high. I think we have, you know, four good lines that can pretty much play against anybody. And, you know, when you're deep like that, you know, that kind of gives your locker room a lot of hope. You know, I've been on some teams and coached some teams where you got one line, you know, or two lines, and that can get pretty stressful for a locker room when all the pressure falls on, you know, 5 or 10 guys. But on this team, you know, we're pretty well spread out with our defensive play and our offensive ability. So I think we're a confident group. I think, you know, trying to get back to that momentum is really the key. And we ran into some good defensive play in Philly and Arizona. And, you know, so we haven't had a ton of offensive success, but we've worked our butts off, you know, and that's kind of the blueprint. You get the work, the rest will come. And that's what we've done, you know, since the Vegas game is we've come out, we've battled, we've worked. We didn't get the outcome we wanted against Arizona, but we got the work we wanted. And that's the blueprint, you know. So for the remaining 30-plus games, if you have that, then, you know, then you can sleep at night as a player or as a coach, because that's the foundation. And they've had that foundation all year, pretty much every practice. It just hasn't always correlated to the games, but the work ethic on this team's fantastic, which is a testament to our leadership group, because they drive it. And so, you know, I think, like I said, the foundation's there. We just have to, you know, put it together and then try and make a, we got to go on a run now. And, you know, so everybody knows that we're capable of doing that. We've done it in the past. Now we just have to put it into place.
Preds assistant coach Dan Highnote with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So Dan, to that point, I'm always curious from a coaching perspective, obviously, you know, especially in this league, when you're playing almost every other night, it's a very, you know, singular focus. You're moving on from one game to the next. But just from a coaching staff perspective, from a locker room perspective, how much do you guys kind of talk about the big picture and maybe the sense of urgency in terms of where you are in the standings? Like, how much do those conversations come up, or is it more day-to-day worrying about each opponent with you guys?
It's a little of both. You know, I think from a coaching perspective, you always talk about the big picture because you have to, you know, with the looming deadline and, you know, what your upcoming next 10 games look like, you know, because, you know, when you're making lineup decisions, that's a big part of it. You don't get the luxury of just looking at it from one game at a time. But from a player's perspective, that's really the key is, you know, they're all paying attention. They all know where we sit and how far we're out of playoffs or how far you're in playoffs and how many games you got left. Like, the players are very intelligent and they care about the game, you know, and they're fans of the game. We got a lot of rink rats here. So they know. It's not, you know, we're not surprising anybody if we were to tell them where we sat, big picture. But the key is to remember that every game is just as important as the next, right? Whether it's in Arizona where they stand in the standings, or in Boston, you know, which are kind of two ends of the spectrum, you have to approach the game exactly the same. And so that's, you know, kind of our focus with the players is, you know, Heinze's been talking about one of 32, one of 31, you know, like each one is equally important, you know, on our end run. But I think deep down, we all know we need to go on a little bit of a run to climb in the standings.
Dan, obviously, unfortunate, you know, the hit that Philip Forsberg took in Philadelphia. And I know David Poile told us he won't be available tonight, but hopefully soon. In the meantime, Philip Tomasino, up from Milwaukee, got a chance, had some opportunities the other night. How do you feel like, you know, his game has changed or evolved this season in Milwaukee? And do you feel like he could, even when Forsberg comes back, potentially help this club moving forward?
Yeah, I love Tommy's game. I think when he was down in Milwaukee, he established a little bit more of his attack game, you know, attack mode. You know, sometimes when you're a really skilled player with a high-end computer, you tend to watch the game and try and find loose pockets where you can fit into it. But, you know, that's not always your role on a line. Sometimes you need to be the hunter. Sometimes you need to be F1. Sometimes you need to be F3 and back check and track. You know, so as much offense as you want to play with, it doesn't always fit the narrative of that shift. And I think that's really what he's learned in Milwaukee is, you know, he has these offensive abilities, but he's disciplined now in his hunting role, in his defensive role, and in his tracking role. You know, that I think he was really good with the puck when he was here, and it was his game without the puck that kind of had a setback earlier this year. So I think that going down to Milwaukee, and a credit to those coaches, has developed really well. And it showed the other night against Arizona, where, you know, he had three or four good hits. He had a couple steals defensively that turned into offense. He looked good on the power play. He looked assertive. I love the way he was skating. So, you know, I look forward to watching his game evolve more here as well, because, you know, the game is different. But as long as you have the foundation of work away from the puck, then you're going to be successful. And he seemed to have found that.
Well, Dan, last thing for you here, as you prepare for the game tonight, coming off the game on Monday, what's your message? What's the coaching staff's message to the players tonight as they prepare to take on Boston?
Well, these games are easy to coach in the sense of, you know, everyone in the world knows how good Boston is. Everyone in the world knows, you know, Marchand's going to try and get under your skin. Everyone knows that Bergeron's going to play probably the perfect game. you know, and McAvoy's going to hit you. Like everyone in the league watches Boston because they're kind of the blueprint of success. So, from a coaching perspective, you're just getting them ready, you know, strategically with little nuances of your systems that might work against theirs and that kind of thing. But as far as motivating them and preparing them to what to expect, like, this is one of the easiest games in that regard to coach, because they know what's coming, which is great, because I think we're the type of team that reacts really well to that kind of challenge. Like, I love these games with our team because it's a great measuring stick, and this could be the perfect platform for us to propel into, you know, a streak, right? You come out and play well against Boston, and you gain the confidence of that's the best this league has to offer, and we went toe-to-toe with them. We can play against anybody, right? But that's how we need to come out of this game. You know, you sometimes these games, you can play the best game in the world and not win. We understand that. But you need to know that you can hang toe-to-toe with a team like Boston to give yourself the kind of confidence that we need to put a streak together. So to me, this is a perfect opportunity for our team to kind of get going in that direction.
Well, Dan, we really appreciate your time as always. Thanks for being with us this morning. Good luck tonight against Boston, and we'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Take care. I'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Preds assistant coach Dan Hinote, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. And Joe, to that point, I mean, we talked about this earlier this week. The Arizona loss, I mean, at this point, it is what it is. It's a bad loss. It's one that you can't have when you're where the Predators are in the standings, but you know what's coming tonight. And, you know, this is a game, to his point. I agree with everything he said there. I also would say, like, if you're a player and you don't approach it that way tonight, you got a good chance of getting embarrassed. So they know that heading into this game.
Yeah, well, I think he's right that if they, you know, this is a game that you could slingshot off if you win, but I guess even if you, you know, like lose in overtime or something like that, but, you know, compete with them, this is the best the league has to offer, like you said. You would think that this would be greeted by the Preds as an opportunity, especially coming off that last loss, to see the best team in the league. You gotta embrace that.
Well, the bottom line is, regardless of who it is right now, I mean, you got to have it. You got to start having these games if you're the Predators. So the opponent, I mean, at this point, really doesn't matter. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 745 here on the program. Looking forward to that coming up next. Make sure you tune in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a pair of tickets to a future Preds home game. Pick to Click brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. Visit TJAndersonHomes.com to see why they're referred to so often. And Superbook Sports, voted number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Would like a world of change. It helps me to appreciate those nights and those dreams.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Joe Rexroad, the floor is yours. I turn things over to you.
Maybe one of these we should just go ahead and just let Scott Stapp just let it rip for a whole segment, you know? Just really let it flow over us.
You don't have to convince me.
Oh, I know. Creed, better than Beatles. There's a headline right there, per Robbie Stanley.
You think I'm joking.
Oh God! Just I can't even face the world when saying that out loud. So today I want to talk about college football scheduling, which I just retweeted our analysis of a fan survey, and I want to say that I was anticipating going off on some fans, but the fans did really well except for one fan base. Okay, so to give you a little background here, you know, the SEC debating what they're going to do with the schedule. They have to go to 9. They have to go to 9. Let's make that clear. We all need to agree on that. 9 conference games, that means you protect 3. I believe that will happen. If that doesn't happen, there's a week full of rants, okay, coming up. But they have to go to 9, and that will protect 3 games for everyone. And so Seth Emerson, friend of the show, our Georgia writer, did a survey and had fans vote basically, you know, their top 3 choices for their team, you know, for all the teams, you know, fans voted. Now, again, we don't have, you know, you can't break it down like, you know, to like verify yourself. I suppose like one fan could like troll another team or whatever. But for the most part, this all makes sense. It all adds up. And then I go to Kentucky. Now, choice one.
Really? Oh, my gosh.
Yes,
this is so funny.
I go to hashtag BBN. Now, choice one is Tennessee, which is interesting. Now, I personally do not believe that Tennessee-Kentucky should be – I mean, they're just – we'll get to Tennessee in a minute. But choice two and choice three for Kentucky fans, Vanderbilt. You soft, soft Kentucky fans. Just
well,
trying
they
to
did
load
just,
up
they
with
did
Vanderbilt.
Just, they did just beat us, Joe.
Exactly. So you're trying to load up with Vanderbilt, and you just lost to Vanderbilt. I just want to give you a little bit of crap. But Kentucky's a tough one because, you know, there's not obvious rivals, really. I mean, Kentucky-Tennessee has been pretty decent. You know, Kyle wrote about this. What would Kentucky's – I mean, I guess you keep it what's that?
Missouri?
Has it?
Yeah.
Has it been decent? Okay.
Wait, has what been decent?
Kentucky, Tennessee.
Well.
Okay, other than this year, let's talk about their football team.
There have been some good games. There have been, how about that? Like, Tennessee always wins them, but there have been there have been some good games.
I feel like Missouri for Kentucky is a good one. And South Carolina.
Well, yeah, fine. That's the thing. It's like some of these, like, okay, sure, I guess that's fine. Whereas one thing that absolutely has to happen, and I'm glad to see that, like, Texas and A&M fans both agree, like, Texas and Texas A&M has to be annual again. Has to be.
Yes.
Just like Texas-Oklahoma, it has to be. I don't care about – and that's the thing is, then people are going to complain about competitive balance, which does get me around to – Vanderbilt, by the way, they're choice two and choice three were Kentucky. So, I think Vanderbilt-Kentucky's fine. Vanderbilt, I guess South Carolina – or I'm sorry, Kentucky, South Carolina. Vanderbilt has to be Tennessee. Mitch Light makes a case for Ole Miss. I like that, too. They've played a lot, had good games. Tennessee, I am very proud of Tennessee fans because they actually – I was worried, and I've heard people say this, and I reject it out of hand, and I think it has to be a small group, especially – you know, I know this is one poll – but Alabama won in a landslide for choice one, and that is exactly right. And I've heard over the years, got to get out of the Alabama game. This is not fair every year, all that stuff. I'm sorry, but this is tradition that has to be preserved. It's SEC tradition. It's been a great rivalry overall. And look, I mean, last year's game, to me, like, should end any discussion. Tennessee got it done, and I think moving forward, look, every program is cyclical. It may not seem like Alabama will ever cycle down, but they will because that's – I mean, Nick Saban is not going to live forever, not going to coach forever. That program is not going to be, you know, foolproof. So I was very happy to see that they dominated. And then to me, it's very simple. It's Florida and it's Vanderbilt. I mean, that's what it has to be. I was also happy to see that Florida – I think the big problem with Tennessee in recent years is they've had Alabama, but also they're locked in with Georgia because of the SEC East, right? So thank goodness – we can bury these divisions, and that's it. It's very simple for Tennessee. It's Alabama, it's Florida, and absolutely Vanderbilt. If you have an in-state rivalry that has the history that that one does, and I know for a lot of that history for decades, it was lopsided and an ugly game, but that needs to be preserved as well. As much tradition as you can preserve, you have to. And Florida-Tennessee is a newer rivalry, but the bottom line is that was the most important game in the league for more than a decade, and really as important a game as there was in college football in a lot of those years, and they still hate each other. So they're simple. If it's anything but those three, then somebody has really screwed up here.
I would agree. Now, I have always been one that says I'd never want the Alabama rivalry to go away if you're Tennessee. Like, that needs to be an annual thing. Now, I do wonder, for Tennessee fans as a whole that were involved in all this, how many of them, like, if Tennessee doesn't do what they did this year against Alabama, what does that result look like? I don't know the answer to that. I have a suspicion that it would not be number one.
Yeah, you may be right. You may be right. And I'm sure that and it's this year's result, and it's also just probably the confidence that, okay, like, let's, like, even if Alabama had, like, not screwed it up and had kicked their own game-winning field goal, right, instead of opening the door for Tennessee to do it, I still feel like, okay, you've seen it. I mean, this can be competitive. But you're right, actually winning, actually proving you can do it. I mean, Butch almost won one of those games, too, for crying out loud.
He did.
Probably sways a lot of minds. But, yeah, those minds never should have been, you know, again, before this run, Tennessee dominated that series, and it was, God, you know, Alabama's desperately trying to find a coach. I mean, these things are going to happen to every program.
There are some, and like Michelle brought up Missouri. Like, I have no idea what their three teams should be. Like, I guess you could, like, when Oklahoma and Texas come in, maybe they're involved, and you could, you know, kind of reignite some of the old Big 12 games. I don't know. Like, there are some teams spread out throughout the SEC where you're just like, all right, we're trying to make some pods here, and I have no idea which three teams to put in, like, the South Carolina pod.
Yeah, well, see, Georgia fans also, by the way, get a little nod for being soft because they're voting for South Carolina as one of their rivals. So, but I think that actually probably will be what it is. It'll probably be –
Agreed.
It'll probably be, you know, Florida, of course. I mean, that's one that has to. And I think Georgia Auburn, which actually is the oldest rivalry, probably. And that's one thing that's kind of cool, you know, to preserve that. And then probably South Carolina, which you quote, give them a quote unquote a break. Yeah, Missouri. I think Oklahoma probably gets Missouri to balance out, the fact that they're going to get, I think, Texas and Texas A&M, right? I mean, they should. And then it's like it's the old Big Eight with Oklahoma, Missouri every year. But Texas has to be, you know, Texas has to be really, though, it's the three that won with big numbers, and it has to be that to me. It's Oklahoma, it's Texas A&M, and then, yeah, I mean, Texas, Arkansas, we get back to the Southwest Conference days. You know, if we're going to do all this realigning, let's renew some tradition.
Well, the bottom line is, like, there's going to be somebody that, if this process takes place, is going to feel like they're getting screwed in this thing. Like Florida, like, if Florida ends up with Georgia, Tennessee, and LSU, which has been their crossover rival for the last 20 years or whatever it's been, they're going to look around and say, huh, this sounds fun. Tennessee, Georgia, and LSU in our pod every year. Let's do it.
Yeah. By the way, those fans deserve a call out too, because they tried to sneak in South Carolina as their number three instead of LSU. No, Gators. Can't happen. Sorry.
No question about it. This has been the Rex Rant. Go ahead, Michelle.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, I feel like it's hard though too, because even though some of those rivalries are so historic, right, and you want to keep them, I mean, some of those games just as of recent, like, Florida hasn't been good. Tennessee was good this year, but it's just hard. At least in my, like, lifetime, I'm like, wait, they're rivals? You know, some of these teams, just because we haven't seen competitive games in such a long time with some of those we mentioned.
That's true.
Yep, for sure. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. We'll get into a long list of NFL topics with Charles. He joins us every Thursday morning from 8 to 8:30. Looking forward to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.